Hi, I'm Ed Slott.
And I'm Jeff Levine.
And we're two guys who just love to talk about retirement and taxes.
Look, our mission is simple, to educate you, the saver, so that you can make better decisions, because better decisions, on the whole, lead to better outcomes.
And here's how we're going to do that. Each week, Jeff and I will debate the pros and the cons of a particular retirement strategy or topic, with the goal of helping you keep more of your hard-earned money.
At the end of each debate, there's going to be one clear winner. You, a more informed saver who can hopefully apply the merits of each side of the debate to your own personal situation to decide what's best for you and your family.
So here we go. Welcome to the Great Retirement Debate.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the latest episode of the Great Retirement Debate. I'm Jeff Levine. With me, as always, is my partner in crime, Ed Slott. Ed, what's going on today?
Great to be here. Today, we're talking about Irma. Now, there may be somebody watching the podcast named Irma. I have a feeling there's a lot of people.
Right. We're talking specifically to you today. It's only to you.
I don't think I've heard that name since my grandmother. I mean, I think a lot of her friends were Irma or Sadie or somebody like that. But it's we're talking about Medicare, income-related monthly adjustment amount.
That's it.
Monthly adjustment amount that determines how much your Medicare premiums can go up for Parts B and D. And this affects, obviously, virtually everybody on Medicare, depending on your income. And it's not just your income like other portions of the tax code where you hit a certain income and it phases in or phases out. In this case, you go $1 over the limit. It's what we call a cliff. And all of a sudden, your monthly premiums can go up, costing you hundreds of dollars more a month, or even in the thousands in some cases for the year.
Yeah. So I guess our topic really today then is, how big of a deal are these Irma charges? Are these what are called Irma surcharges?
Yeah. So the question is, there are a big deal, and there are, but they're tough to plan for. And that's the context we're talking about. Adding income specifically for a Roth conversion. That's the number one question I get when I do consumer programs and I talk all about the Roths. I'll give you an example. There was one case where I had a big crowd and I talked all about the Roth and they all love the idea. And a woman gets up in front of the whole group and says, wait a minute, I like the idea of these Roth conversions, but if I convert to a Roth, won't that increase my income? And I said, yes, absolutely. Well, if it increases my income, could it push me and increase my Medicare Irma charges? And I said, it really could. And if you go even a dollar over the limit, it could really increase them. That's for sure. She says, well, if that happened, that would make me very angry. And I said to her in front of everybody, well, if that would make you very angry, then convert anyway, because I'd rather have you be angry 1 year than be angry for the rest of your life. So here's what I meant by that. The money that's coming out of your IRA is going to be forced out at some point in your life. Right now, age 73 for most people, unless you're in a plan, but for your IRA, age 73, you have required minimum distributions. And those are forced distributions, whether you like it or not. We're talking about, say, Roth conversions here. So if you do nothing, if you say, well, I don't want to convert because I don't want to increase my Medicare charges, so you do nothing, your IRA doesn't go away. It continues to grow and grow and build. And then once you hit RMDs at age 73, well, then your RMDs may be so high that the very thing that made you angry in the first place will happen to you for the rest of your life, triggering those Medicare Irma charges. You have to look long term. Personally, to me, depending on what you add income for, and we're talking about a Roth conversion, which is, I think, at low rates, is a good thing to add income, is a good thing to do when your tax rates are low. And I don't think that Irma charges, for the most part, should deter you from converting. To me, at the end of the game, if you're building up in a Roth, it's more like a rounding error. You have to look at in the grand scheme of things, where you want to end up. And if you want to end up, again, my opinion, opinion, with more money in the Roth IRA and it costs you a few more dollars in IRMA charges, you'll still be better off in the long run. Because let's take the extreme, Jeff. Let's say you converted everything. Well, now
Sure.
in retirement, you won't have any RMDs. And then
That's
you'll,
right.
just when you need the money the most in retirement, you won't have to worry, generally, depending on your other income, about these IRMA charges. So I don't think it's a big deal in the making the decision on whether to convert to a Roth or not.
All right, so let's rewind a little bit. Let's talk a
All
little
right.
bit more about these IRMA surcharges. As you already mentioned, these are the income-related monthly adjustment amounts. And effectively, you can think of them as an extra charge for individuals with higher income. The higher your income up to certain points, the more you're going to pay in surcharges. In a similar way to the way that tax brackets rise as you have higher income. But for whereas with income, right, you start at the 10% tax bracket and you go up from there. We started at zero IRMA, right? There's for if your income is low enough, you don't have any IRMA. Your IRMA is zero. That doesn't mean your premium for Medicare is zero. You just have the like the regular or what they call the base premium amount for that year. If your income rises, and for 2025 as an example here, you have to have more than about $106,000 of income as a single filer before you are impacted, and twice that, $212,000 of income as a married couple filing a joint return before you're affected. So it doesn't impact the majority of individuals out there because the majority of people who are on Medicare, so generally talking about people who are 65 or older, the majority of those individuals have income below those amounts. Those are still relatively high income amounts. So most people don't have to worry about IRMA. So if our, you know, if the topic of this discussion today is, are IRMA surcharges a big deal or not? For the overwhelming majority of people, the answer is they're not, because they just don't have income high enough that they even need to think about these things in the first place. Now, for those who have done a really great job saving over the years or who are fortunate enough to have higher income, then they can be pretty significant. So just as, again, you know, never know when someone might listen to this, but in the year 2025, right, if you think about what these can actually equate
You
to,
know, there's
and
a song like that, in the year 2525, but this is 2025.
yeah, okay, yes, 2025. Yeah, all right, well, I put us
Planning
into
out
the
in the
future.
future.
Yeah, a couple of years, yeah. So I mean, but for 2025, I'm just going to go with that, right? For 2025, if your income is higher and at the highest tier, you could end up paying about $443, well, actually a little bit more than that, almost $444 a month more each month for your Medicare Part B premiums. Now, the same IRMA like concept also applies to Medicare Part D. Part A, there's no surcharges. You don't have to worry about that.
Right.
And Part C is Medicare Advantage. So we're just going to think about that. We'll leave that to the side for now. But for Medicare Part B and Part D, the prescription drug plan Part D, there's also a premium surcharge there. And that's another up to another about $86 a month. And what's important is how much this impacts you depends upon your specific circumstance. If your income is lower, your surcharge may be lower. But if you are married, well, there's two of you, which means that each of you may have Medicare Part B and Part D, which means that each of you may be subject to a higher surcharge. And, you know, just to give people an idea of how significant at a maximum this can be, in 2025, we're talking about a potential increase. Not total premium, but an increase from the baseline of more than $10,500 for Part B and of more than $2,000 for Part D for a married couple. So a married couple could end up paying, in addition to the regular baseline Part B and Part D premiums that everyone pays, they could end up paying more than $12,500 more in just surcharges. A way to think of it is as penalties for having higher income.
Yeah, that's right. And it's a cliff kind of thing. It's not like the progressive tax rates, like you said. Like if you're in a 37% bracket, you get part of the 10 and all of that stuff. Once you go over the cliff by a dollar, you jump to the next bracket. So that could be a big problem. So you're right. I agree that.
So effectively, Ed, I want to pause you there, just to as the youths say, double click on that for a moment. $212,000 I mentioned for 2025 is the limit before you go into the IRMA. So what you're saying as a cliff is, if someone had $212,000 of income and they filed a joint tax return, they would have no surcharges for the year. But if they had $212,001, then they have to pay the higher surcharge amount, which in this case for 2025 is $74 for the entire year. So having $1 more of income, just to give people a sense of what this cliff looks like, that means having one extra dollar of income in the example I gave, going from 212,000 to 212,001 means $74 a month more times that potentially two people, if you're married, right? That's $148 per month. And then you've got to pay that monthly, which means it's $1,776. Very American number there
Wait
for
a
you, Ed.
minute. Plus,
$1,776
yeah.
more
Plus
by
the
having
Part D.
$1 more.
Plus the Part D.
That's right. Plus the Part D, which in this case would be $13.70 more a month on top of that. Which, you know, again, we're talking about almost $2,000 more in what you'd have to pay by having $1. That's like a 2 billion% tax rate or something like that, Ed.
But what we're talking about here, does it pay in the context, at least what I'm talking about, is of the Roth conversion, where you are right, most people will be under. These are pretty good limits for the average income of somebody on Medicare. But you have a spike in income. Let's say you convert, I don't know, $300,000. All right, so you're going to get hit probably with the maximum, but only for that year. Look long term, that's $300,000 you took out of your IRA that won't produce higher RMDs in the future. If you don't start bringing this IRA balance down, you will have this problem every year when you start, or part of it, depending on how much you have in your IRA, beginning at age 73. So you have to look out. And it's also a very tough thing. We do tax planning. We talk about it all the time. It's one of the toughest things to plan for two reasons. One of them, I think you said, the Medicare charges appear nowhere on a tax return. So if you're looking at a tax return, how do you plan for it? But it's also a 2-year look back. So you have to plan 2 years ahead. So if you're doing Roth conversions, for example, a lot of times we tell people if you're that worried about the Medicare surcharges, do all of your conversions before reaching age 63. Some
That's
people
right.
might say, well, I'll wait till I'm 64 because Medicare charges kick in at 65. No, if you convert in the year you turn 63, that's going to show up 2 years later. So you'd have to convert at 62 or earlier. That's one way to avoid them. Start doing your conversions earlier if you can.
Yeah, and I find a lot of people are confused by that. And they say, why do they have to go back 2 years? So basically what you're saying is now, you know, as we sit here today, Ed, we're in 2025. See, I got it right that time. You're saying that today, someone's surcharges in 2025 are generally based on what their income was in 2023, 2 years before today, correct?
It's already locked in.
That's it. Can't do anything about it. Now, people say, like, why is that? It's very simple. It's the year that the Social Security Administration knows what your income is for the most part, right? Like, when you think about starting 2025, what are your surcharges going to be in January? Well, that if you base it on the previous year, no one knows what your income was in 2024 until you file your 2024 return, but you generally don't do that until part of the way into 2025. So at the start of 2025, the most recent tax return that the Social Security Administration has for the most part is 2023. That's why they look back 2 years. It's a matter of being practical about what they can actually have access to from a data perspective. And it's also worth mentioning one other thing, Ed. You said, well, what if you're 63 and somebody said, I want to convert at 64? There are exceptions to this rule. And that's why, you know, Ed and I are here to provide information and general education for folks. But we are also big believers in working with a knowledgeable professional whenever you have big decisions to make, because there's always exceptions. For instance, If you retired when you're 64, then there's a form that you can fill out, the SSA, the Social Security Administration 44 form, where you can report a life-changing event to basically say, I had high income 2 years ago, but I don't really have high income now. And it has to be for some approved reason, like I retired, or I got married, or I got divorced, or something like that, or someone died. And you can actually tell the Social Security Administration, don't use this old income number, use this new income number because it's more reflective of my current status. But again, you've got to know that that form exists. You've got to know to fill it out. It's got to be done in a timely manner. It's got to be done correctly. And so everything we say, it's just as a general rule of thumb, like it's always best to make sure that you're getting the best information for your specific circumstance, especially for big decisions like Roth conversions and things like you're talking about, Ed, retirement, and how do I deal with these IRMA surcharges, et cetera.
Go back to the form. Let's say you did all the things you said. One excuse that's not acceptable is for a Roth conversion.
That's right. Yep.
So you did all of that. So if you have a spike in income for a Roth conversion, that's not going to help you in that recalculation.
So at the end of the day, Ed, what do you say? You say IRMA surcharges are a big deal or not?
I don't think they're generally a big deal for the reasons you said up front that it doesn't affect most people, the surcharges we're talking about, where you go up. But even for those who convert 300,000, 400,000, 500,000, they get hit that 1 year. If you look at the tax-free buildup in that Roth IRA for the rest of your life and 10 years beyond to your beneficiaries, that's nothing. Those IRMA charges are going to be, like I said before, a rounding error. That's really all they're going to be. In the grand scheme of things, you and your family will be way ahead, I believe, with the Roth IRA, even if it caused that spike in income that triggered these Medicare surcharges.
Yeah, ultimately, if we think about what this could be for higher earners, it can equate to, in some cases, and I'm just giving a round number here, assume it's almost like a 3% increase in tax rate, right?
Right.
When you think about you're paying IRMA surcharges generally with after-tax money. So if, as in my example, you have to pay $12,500 of surtax for the year, it probably means you had to earn about another, if it's ordinary income, $25,000 maybe between state and federal taxes in order to get the $12,500 to pay the IRS. And if you figure $25,000 out of your income, if you're making in this case
Right,
$750,000,
that's
which is
the
where that
point.
top one kicks in, it's 3%. So is 3% a big deal or not? It's a personal opinion. It's certainly not trivial, but it's also probably not breaking the bank for someone who's making $750,000 a
Yeah.
year in retirement.
Right. And I want to point out what Jeff just said there. That's where the top bracket kicks in. For married couples, 750,000 when you hit that. So that's a pretty healthy number. And for singles, it's 500,000. So that's a pretty good number. So in the long run, yes, you should be concerned about it and you should know about it for things that increase your income that, don't have a long-term benefit. For example, I can't even think of an example, but just to add income. But for something that has a huge long-term benefit, like a Roth IRA, to have that money building tax-free, no RMDs, grows and compounds income tax-free for the rest of your life and 10 years beyond, that's a small price to pay.
I agree with all of that. And I would add just one more thing. Nothing makes people more upset than
I
being like
know.
$1 over the
I
surcharge limit,
know.
right? Because
I
again, it's a
know.
cliff. So this goes back to having good planning, right? If your income is going to be just a little bit over, do something, right? Either add more income so you're getting more out of it, or go back a little bit. But because of the cliff nature of this, it's even more important in some ways to plan for your IRMA than it is even for your regular tax brackets. If you're over by a dollar in a regular tax bracket, only that last dollar gets taxed at the higher rate. But with an IRMA, you go over by $1, and you and potentially even your spouse, if you're married, are going to pay those higher surcharges for the entire following year. And Ed, that doesn't sound like fun.
Yeah, and you are absolutely right. When I do seminars, everybody hates these IRMA charges. It's all they talk about. But that's why we're addressing it. But we're addressing a bigger picture, a bigger benefit long term, that it's not as big as as big of a deal. Nobody likes to pay more. They all complain about it. You're absolutely right about that. But you got to look at it long term. You may end up way better off, especially in terms of a Roth conversion, I believe, anyway.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%. All right. Well, Ed, that's all the time we have for this episode of The Great Retirement Debate. Remember, the goal of this show is to help make you, the consumer, the winner of every one of our debates, in that you are more informed and can make better decisions about your future, and better decisions on the whole lead to better outcomes. And that's what Ed and I hope for you. So thanks so much for joining us for this episode of The Great Retirement Debate, and we'll see you real soon.
Jeffrey Levine is Chief Planning Officer at Focus Partners. This podcast is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be construed as specific investment, accounting, legal, or tax advice. Certain information mentioned may be based on third-party information which may become outdated or otherwise superseded without notice. Third-party information is deemed to be reliable, but its accuracy and completeness cannot be guaranteed. The topic discussed and corresponding arguments are those of the speakers and may not accurately reflect those of Focus Partners.